Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's go in depth on all things Hawkeyes. This is Hawk Central. On Des Moines Sports Station, 106.3 KXNO.
Happy Wednesday, Hawkeye fans, and welcome into another episode of the Hawk Central Radio Hour. Back home again in our 6 to 7 time slot here on Wednesday, and back home in Des Moines from the Final Four and the national championship game for the Iowa women's team. Welcome right here on 106.3 KXNO. I am your host, Chad Lystico, columnist for the Des Moines Register who covers the Iowa Hawkeyes. My life has been consumed, like yours probably has been, for the last month by Iowa women's basketball. And yes, we all knew it had to end at some point. It comes to end in the final game possible, an 87-75 loss to South Carolina in the national championship game. Ends the career of Kate Martin, Gabby Marshall, Molly Davis, Sharon Goodman, and, of course, the GOAT, Caitlin Clark, in a game that was witnessed by an incredible 18.9 million TV viewers on ABC. Just an unbelievable ride to cover, to follow, to watch. Encourage you guys to catch our post-game Hawk Central pod if you missed some of the, you know, game action recap. That's at hawkcentral.com or on our Hawk Central YouTube page. But as we left Cleveland, Dargan Southard, my teammate on the women's beat, our leader on the women's beat, I should say, kind of where did your mind go as you got back home about everything that happened for these Hawkeyes?
Well, first I went to sleep. and then when my mind woke up from that, I think it's really just kind of incredible to, again, like you said, we all knew the end was coming and we all knew that there was nothing you could do to stop it. But to think that Caitlin Clark's career in the state of Iowa, going back to, you know, even her Dowling years where there was a lot of hype from the beginning there as well. It really is kind of crazy to think that her next chapter is now here and her time at Iowa is finished. But I think it goes to show just how impactful and how much things have changed with this program and everything, that it really seems like everybody is just trying to hang on for one more second or one more highlight reel, or, you know, the celebration is Wednesday night, so I'm sure that will be packed. And I mean, it's very evident now that it's over how, you know, even more so how significant this team was for so many people across the state and in it. To see everybody really kind of come together under this team has been pretty special to watch.
Yeah, it was really... I was really glad I could sit in on Caitlin's last media availability as a Hawkeye. Ended up in the front middle, which was awesome because it was so hard to just even talk to her all year. And just hearing from her, one of the quotes that stood out, not the one that went viral, but the one that went that she talked about kind of early on in that availability was just like, I wanted to take Iowa to a Final Four. And we got to two of them. And she didn't even mention that they got to two national championship games. And it was just like, when she promised that she was going to, or vowed or whatever, to take Iowa to the Final Four, like, that was like a big goal. But it was like, maybe, if you get there, you're not going to be competitive. In other words, like, maybe you make a run through the bracket, you know, you get to the Sweet 16 via home, a couple home wins, and then you get there, almost like you did last year. You know, you kind of got there. But they not only got there both years, but they took down defending national champions along the way, got to the national championship game. I mean, to me, the fact that they did that twice, I think, will just be, as time passes, I mean, you'll realize just how hard it is to get to a national title game in one of the major sports. I mean, football or basketball. Men's or women's. I mean, it is It is remarkable to think about that what this program accomplished in her era. And we talked about it a little bit. I can't remember if we did it on the pod or off air, but if we did, big deal to repeat it. But like 16-2 in the postseason over the last two seasons, with those only losses being in the national title game. I mean, to run the table in the Big Ten tournament both years, never as a one seed, and then to win five straight in the NCAA tournament. And so many of those, Dargan, are like not gimme games. I mean, like hardly any of them are. Going back to Maryland in the Big Ten tournament last year, you know, that was a team that clocked Iowa in the regular season. And then, you know, you get them in the Big Ten tournament. You route Ohio State in the finals. I mean, just all these toss-up type of games where Caitlin Clark and the Hawkeyes came through, Lisa Bluter, everybody else, you know, delivered a game plan to get them a victory, whether it was LSU this year, South Carolina last year. To me, that's part of the remarkable part about this, not just saying they got to the Final Four twice.
Yeah, and I mean, if you think about all that they stacked up along the way, and, you know, when Caitlin Clark got here, I still think there was kind of this impenetrable wall of the upper echelon of women's basketball, and it was hard to envision teams coming and going from it. But in those 2 years of getting to the national championship game, Iowa beat UConn, obviously a powerhouse, South Carolina, obviously a powerhouse. Wherever Kim Mulkey is coaching tends to be a powerhouse. We saw that this year, and even Louisville last year. I mean, that's a team that repeatedly got to the Final Four. So I think it just shows that as much skepticism as there was with Caitlin Clark's bold declarations at the beginning of her career, not only did she meet those, but somebody who preaches dream big so often, what materialized was even bigger than her own dreams, you know, to go to two title games, to go to two Final Fours, to have all the statistical stuff that is historically great, obviously the big ones with the scoring record and whatnot, but there's so many other statistical combinations or this or that that is the first time in however long. There's so many of those that it's hard to keep track of them all. You know, that her career, I think, can resoundingly say went even more, was even more significant than she thought it could be. And this is somebody who obviously doesn't get into the position she is without having big dreams and big ambitions and all that. So it really is an incredible 2 years, an incredible 4 years as well, that is going to be hard to match moving forward. But Iowa is certainly going to give it its best shot and have, you know, hopefully a large part of the momentum it has right now continuing even as Caitlin Clark moves on.
Yeah, and to have the first nine games of her college career on streaming services only, a lot of them played like in the weekday afternoons during the COVID pandemic. I mean, going from that to 18.9 million viewers in the national championship game, that's an increase of 89% over last year's title game of 9.9, which everyone was just blown away by. It is the most watched basketball game of any kind since the NCAA championship on the men's side in 2019 between Virginia and Texas Tech. That was 19.6 million, and it is better than every NBA Finals game dating back to Warriors-Cavs Game 5 on ABC in 2017. So the most watched, no NBA Finals game was watched more than that, and that was obviously a very significant game in NBA history. Back in 2017, that just gives you a little perspective in to how massive Caitlin Clark grew viewership of women's basketball. Also outdrew the Washington-Texas college football playoff semifinal, which was like an unbelievable game. So it drew more eyeballs than that did even this past season. The only game I think that topped it besides the title game was Ohio State-Michigan football, which obviously had huge consequences back on the day after Thanksgiving. So that's kind of the viewership, you know, the growth of the game that we saw, Dargan. But I wanted to talk about the seniors, I guess, and just kind of saying goodbye to them. I know the celebration is going on as we air tonight over at Carver. We're recording this earlier in the day, by the way, full disclosure. But just all five seniors that are leaving all kind of had their own different story. I'll let you pick one to talk about. That is departing and what you'll remember about her.
Yeah, so, you know, it's interesting. As much as Caitlin Clark is the headliner for all of this, I feel like once this team got fully into the spotlight, everybody kind of found an element of this team that resonated with them. And everybody else not named Caitlin Clark, I feel like, was even, you know, a little more relatable just because, you know, most people aren't Caitlin Clark. And so I think you got to start with Kate Martin. I mean, going back to her true freshman year, tearing her ACL before she gets to Iowa, which was a terrible thing at the time. But if that doesn't happen, she's not on this year's team because she doesn't have a sixth year. Her fifth year ends last year, and her career doesn't extend. And who knows how this year goes. You know, if you take Kate Martin off of this year's team, I'm not sure it goes the same way. So for her to obviously have a lot of ties to the program and, you know, with the family connection there and really being invested in Iowa women's basketball as long as anybody, for her to have a career that was not only productive, but I feel like it's not an exaggeration to say that the leadership standard at Iowa has been redefined through Kate Martin's contributions, given her incredible importance to these last 2 years and really Caitlin Clark's success as well. So a lot of great memories, a lot of important moments happened with Kate Martin on the court. And so I think her legacy is well cemented as this program moves forward.
Yeah, no question. It was a perfect story for her to get a bloody nose against UConn and then have 16 points in that. She had 16 in that game, right? A bunch of clutch buckets down the stretch. She basically was the only one scoring in the fourth quarter for the Hawkeyes to help them get to the title game. Certainly for me, kind of a soft spot in my heart for Gabby Marshall. I thought her career was also, like you said, you used a great word there, relatable. You know, she wasn't always, you know, on a hot shooting streak, but she always came to play. I think that was what really inspired me as someone covering her, especially when you sit down on the court, you just see how hard she plays on defense. And just when those threes go in for Gabby Marshall, I've written this, I've tweeted this, but like, there's nothing louder than a Gabby Marshall three-pointer ever. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not a Caitlin three or anything.
It's crazy. Like,
and I think there's so much that goes into that. Kate Martin had a beautiful answer about that in one of the locker rooms. I was I had her by myself for a little bit, and I said, "Why do you think that is?" And she was like, "You know, it's just because she's, you know, she hasn't always been like, it's not like a Caitlin Clark thing where she's always been great. You know, she's had the downs, she's had the dips, but the last 2 years in particular, like when Iowa needed her the most, her shot was there, her defense was there, she was playing." I mean, she was basically playing 40 minutes a game in this NCAA tournament, drawing all the toughest defensive assignments. Flauje Johnson, she drew. I mean, talk about a tough assignment in the Elite Eight. She did great in that game. I mean, Flauje got a bunch of points late, but she did awesome. And then to draw Paige Beckers in the Caitlin versus Paige thing. And really, if you rewatch that game, I encourage you all to do it. I mean, just how good her defense was against Paige. She made Paige a very average factor in that game, and the only 3 points that Paige Becker scored in the final 15 minutes of that game was when Iowa lost her in transition. Like, Gabby wasn't even part of that defensive possession. And then, honestly, like, her defense is what clinched that win against UConn. I mean, history, I think, will be on Iowa's side on that. It was clearly a moving screen. Aaliyah Edwards, you know, legs were way wider than shoulder length. There were, like, four different factors about why that was an offensive foul. And to just sort of continue the ridiculousness of that discussion, it's so ridiculous that Gabby got any kind of like hate from any fans anywhere of UConn, because there's no guarantee that there was like 3 seconds left on the clock. They would have had to make at least one pass or one ridiculous shot to try to even score to win that game. And Hannah Stolke was in great defensive position as well on that play. So it's just such a, anyway. That part of it just drives me a little bit nuts. To me, Gabby Marshall's career is such a neat story, and I'm really happy for her that she got a lot of positive recognition from Iowa fans for how good her defense was all the way to the finish. And yeah. Anyway, Molly Davis gets in at the end too, Hondargan. That was kind of interesting.
Yeah, you know, you kind of hope that, you know, we all kind of saw the video of her presumably getting told that she wasn't going to be able to come back at the open practice before the UConn game. And so everybody seeing that and everybody being in the building when her injury happened, I think you really saw the compassion from this fan base take over in, you know, kind of lifting up Molly Davis as much as they could, because it really was a tough situation and it would have been tough for anybody in that spot. But for that to likely be her final basketball moment of her career, obviously she's out of eligibility in college. And I asked Lisa earlier in the season if Molly was going to be somebody who was going to keep playing. And Lisa said she would like to, but it's kind of tough at her position. There's obviously a lot of traffic there. So it very well could be that was her final basketball moment, was getting hurt right before the Final Four, or right before the NCAA tournament or the Big Ten tournament. But yeah, you know, it was nice to see her come in and do what she could. And obviously somebody who, you know, was a little uncomfortable, I feel like, with how much spotlight she got after she got hurt.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's almost like she became more popular after she got hurt, which is a little, I guess, funny if you want to call it that. But yeah, I mean, I think her, again, another relatable situation. You know, you could see the, you know, her contributions all year were huge. Probably one of the players that made the biggest jump from last year to this year, up until she got hurt. So it was nice to see her get in at the end. You know, and Iowa would do what they could to give her proper exit.
Yeah, and when you think about the three women we just talked about, Kate Martin, Gabby Marshall, and Molly Davis. I mean, Kate's going to try to do something in the pros, but I think we all know her future pretty soon will probably be in coaching. And, you know, Gabby's going to go to UNC to be an occupational therapist. You know, you mentioned Molly, and then, of course, there's Sharon Goodman. You know, she gets in also in those last 20 seconds. She decides, you know, she's not going to come back for her fifth year next year. She's going to go to nursing school. So I think that's – and she was just like the model teammate. I mean, a 4.0 student, somebody who is happy for other successes and, you know, kind of – you know, emblematic, I think, of kind of the culture of this team of, you know, if we're not playing, you know, we're still going to love each other. We're still going to, you know, be happy for each other. And I think that all resonated too. And that to me, Dargan, to pull it full circle, is what makes this Iowa women's team so, such a unicorn, I think, as somebody put it, is because it's not like, you know, the four women we just talked about are great all-time Hawkeyes in their own way, but they're not going to probably be pro stars or have a lot of, you know, they're not going to make a lot of money in pro basketball. In fact, three of them we know aren't for sure.
Right.
And so, you know, that this is the end for them. And think about McKenna Warnock, even from last year, you know, she's in dental school, you know, it's just like, I think that just that all that about this Iowa team just sort of makes them even more endearing that they made it that far into the world of college basketball.
Yeah, because obviously you have to have the superstar to get to any sort of elite level like this. But as Caitlin learned and as everybody found out along this journey, like, it took way more than her to get Iowa to the points that it reached. And it doesn't happen if you don't have the culture that values everybody all the way down to the last person on the bench. And, you know, you hear all the time from Lisa Bluter and other coaches, you know, hey, we're obviously – trying to win basketball games and trying to win championships and all that. But the work that we do as coaches is often reflected in how these women go and live their lives after basketball. And I think there's no doubt that particularly with this senior class, that's going to be the case, no matter how long or short all of their careers are after they leave Iowa.
You're listening to Hawk Central from the Des Moines Register and KXNO. This is Chad Lystico talking Iowa women's hoops with Dargan Souther. Dargan, we've got about 6 minutes left. Let's talk about next season for the Hawkeyes and kind of what we learned in the title game. I wrote about this a little bit. You know, Molly's injury definitely hurt, showed up in that South Carolina game. Mm-hmm. The lack of a development in the post behind Stuhlke hurt Iowa in that game. They just didn't have the height. So those two things. I feel like that's the way you've got to build this team in the future, because you can't count on you know, the superstar, the greatest player of all time being on your team.
Yeah.
I think they can do it. I think they can keep this going with depth because they play fast. If they can get like 8-9 really functional pieces, kind of like almost the UConn men in a way, like maybe not to that level, but like just where you've got like 8 or 9 really good players and you need a maestro out there. I mean, Addie Deal is going to be coming along in 2025, could be that person. But I feel like that's the path forward for this team because they've got the coaching, they've got the development, and their ball movement, their offense is just really high-level elite. I mean, we saw that early in the South Carolina game. That was kind of the point of my column. It's like you saw when Iowa had the freshest legs of the game, they could do it, but they just didn't have the bodies when it turned, you know, against a team like South Carolina, which I think will go down as one of the all-time great teams in women's basketball history with so much coming back.
Yeah, I mean, there should be a lot of optimism that you know, I don't know if back-to-back national title games becomes the standard, but there is definitely an increase in expectations for March success that should be able to be reasonably attained in the years after this. You know, you talk about Addie Deal coming in in 2 years. Could be some portal movement for next year, depending on how that shakes out. So I think there's definitely a good foundation to have this program keep this going. And I think one thing that's also interesting is, you know, as much as Iowa owned being in the elite category this year and didn't run from it and obviously met pretty much every expectation that it set out, this program is, you know, kind of its roots are being that underdog program, being that underdog team that nobody really expects anything elite from. And that's how things are going to go nationally back starting next year. You know, I saw the way too early top 25. Obviously, Iowa's not in it. If you look at their title odds for next year, not that they're going to come anywhere close to that, but they're just very, very, very long. And so I think the fact that this program, everybody expects this program to drop off some. And so I think there's going to be a lot of motivation gained from that, hey, you know, Caitlin's years were great and everything, but this program was doing pretty well before her and will be able to sustain some success after her. And so I think with that mindset being back in play, it's definitely going to be beneficial as this program, you know, looks to keep pushing forward.
Yeah, no question. Only a couple minutes left here, but Lucy Olson of Villanova, the nation's number 3 scorer this past season, only behind Caitlin Clark and Juju Watkins, is in the transfer portal, does have interest in Iowa. Iowa interested in her. I'm told she's one of 3 point guards in the portal that Iowa is looking at. Let's say Iowa could get Olson. She's 5'9", scores the ball, you know, has 1 year of eligibility left. Let's say they can get her. To me, that's just that's a perfect bridge almost, because, you know, Aliyah Guyton has that, you know, is recovering from an ACL. Yep. She's not going to be ready, you know, to just take a full steam ahead like Caitlin did, obviously. So I love the idea of a starting lineup. If they could get somebody like an Olson or Olson herself, Olson, you got McCabe / Feuerbach, and then you got a Folter at the 3, Hannah Stuhlke at the 4, back to her natural position. And then you presume Ava Hayden, you know, top 40 recruit at the 5, 6'4". Post. I like the sounds of that Dargan starting next season if they can pull it off, and I think they can.
Yeah, and you got to think, you know, as much as Iowa took some heat for its lack of aggression in the portal last year, this year it's a totally different situation in that there's way more opportunity, there's way more available to go get, especially when you're looking at Iowa's needs. And, you know, I think the blueprint for the kind of season that this could be, I know it's different because they had Kathleen Doyle in-house versus going and getting someone from the portal. But you look at the 1 year in between when Megan Gustafson left and when Caitlin Clark arrived, the 19-20 season, you know, it started off similarly. Iowa had no preseason buzz. Everybody was wondering how the program was going to rebound after Megan Gustafson left. A lot of young pieces that had to find their way, a young Gabby Marshall, young Kate Martin. And that team, had there been an NCAA tournament that year, at minimum would have hosted probably as a 3 or a 4 seed. And so, again, that's kind of what I was saying about how this program, even though it proved itself among the top, can thrive when nobody expects it to do anything. And that's going to be the case. And I think you could definitely see this Iowa season coming up going better than a lot of people are forecasting it to.
Yeah, my recommendation would be don't give up your women's basketball season tickets, because I think it's going to be a hot ticket for years to come. All right, coming up next, Tyler. By the way, thanks for everything, Dargan. It was really fun to cover this whole ride with you, and I know our audience really appreciated your insight on the beat, so thanks.
Yep, it was fun. Appreciate it.
Yeah, coming up next, Tyler Tashman joins Hawk Central to talk spring football and what we learned about the exciting Iowa offense behind the scenes from Tim Lester. You're listening to Hawk Central here on 106.3 KXNO. Welcome back to Hawk Central Radio here on 106.3 KXNO. I'm your host, Chad Lystico, Hawkeyes columnist for the Des Moines Register. Thanks to Dargan Southard on the women's basketball conversation. Now we move to my buddy, Tyler Tashman, who missed the show last week because it was all women's hoops. But I did want to, before we move on to football, Tyler, I wanted to, first of all, thank you publicly for the men's coverage this year that allowed me to do a lot of women's writing, and that was really awesome. But I also wanted to get your perspective, because last year you were covering Indiana, which obviously was right there with Iowa in the Big Ten Conference, so you were kind of on the other side of covering the Iowa women, in a sense. And then this year you helped out with some women's stuff here and there. Just wanted to get your perspective on, I don't know, just like the general thoughts of the Iowa women's basketball phenomenon as it kind of comes to a close this season.
Yeah, I actually remember when Indiana played at Iowa in the last game of the regular season, a season ago, where Kaitlin hit the game winner. Like, I remember hearing about game day being there and just like how crazy the atmosphere was. And it honestly surprised me a little bit, because like I didn't think of like Iowa being like a real women's basketball hotbed. It's just not something that really registered in my mind. And I think over the past year, I've gained a lot greater understanding and appreciation for the way that the fan base has responded to what Caitlin Clark has done, what the Iowa team as a whole has done, and just the fact of like how much this team, you know, means to the fan base, and how much they've really embraced everything that's kind of come along with it. So I think really it just kind of opened my eyes to how much Iowa really loves women's basketball, and really how transcendent the team has been to the fan base.
Yeah, and Tyler did a great piece on Sydnia Fulter toward the end of the run there about her sleepwalking and breaking your arm a couple times. Like, it was really good. So you guys, you know, when you catch a breath here, check out some of Tyler's work down the stretch. It was nice to have you contributing from afar. So thank you for everything this year. And we're just getting started on our first spring football together on the Hawk Central beat. Just 10 days until the spring game, Tyler. And we have barely reported on Hawkeye football, but that's because they haven't really done many interviews, because the women's basketball team has dominated all the coverage and everybody was out, you know, at Cleveland or at Almaty. So let's get into it. So they brought some defensive players yesterday over in Iowa City. Big day tomorrow of interviews. I did not make it over. I took an actual day off on Tuesday, but I wanted to get your live from the scene reporting on kind of the defensive players you heard from. And it sounded like they were talking a lot about the offense, which is obviously, you know, a huge storyline this spring for the Hawks.
Yeah, I honestly think it's probably like a sign of respect to the level the defense is at that they were asked a lot about the offense, because there's not a whole lot of secrets about like what Iowa's defense is expected to do. They're expected to be really good again, and that's kind of the standard that Phil Parker has built. But so there was questions about the offense, and so and this was I'll give what Deshaun Lee said, which kind of was a consensus, just feel about the offense. Was he said, it's just a lot of motion. They're trying to just trick our eyes, just get us off balance. So that's a very obviously brief insight. And I think a lot of the fan base would agree that we're probably at the stage of talk is cheap and let's not put a whole lot of stock into it until we actually see results on the field during a game. But it did sound interesting of basically just kind of, you know, sounds like using some misdirection, trying to, you know, trick the defense a little bit. Just so I thought, you know, that was kind of just an interesting, you know, comment. And then Ethan Herkett also said that, like, tight ends are being used a lot. He actually initially said that they were being used more. And then Tom Kaker was like, well, Iowa already used them a lot. Like, what do you mean by that?
Yeah.
And it sounded like he just said, well, maybe they're kind of being used differently. So sounds like they'll still be very involved, obviously, tight ends. But maybe the way that they're used might be a little different.
Well, you know, he kind of teased that he was going to be bringing some kind of Kyle Shanahan infused, inspired offense. We will see. But, you know, but that Shanahan offense does use tight ends. I mean, just think about San Francisco. I mean, George Kittle, a huge part of that. That would be your Luke Lachey, you would presume. And then, you know, the second tight end this year is Addison Estrenga. So they've got some good pieces there to build off. So that does make some sense. And, you know, San Francisco, for example, like, you know, uses a lot of 21 personnel and 12 personnel. So that'll be fun to find out. We do get Tim Lester next Thursday, so about 8 days from right now. So that'll be fun. Supposed to get some quarterbacks and offensive players tomorrow, so we'll have a lot more updates at Hawk Central on the offensive side. But what else did you learn on the defensive side, Tyler? I know you've got videos up at Hawk Central of Xavier Wampa, I believe Deshaun Lee, John Nestor. Nestor seemed to be the one that had the most intrigue from afar. I wasn't there, but what stood out to you yesterday from, you know, on the defensive side of the ball, I guess?
Yeah, and, you know, Nestor was interesting, and him and Deshaun Lee kind of echoed a similar message of that the cornerback competition has been really good. And so Jamari Harris, it sounds like, is out for the spring, or at least up to this point, it sounds like he's been out. And he'd be one of the expected starters. But that other spot, you know, you would think going into it, Deshaun Lee would be the other guy, as, you know, he started the first two games of last season when Jamari was suspended, then the last four after Cooper DeJean got hurt. But it sounds like the competition is really good. Like, Nestor was pretty adamant that, like, he wants one of those starting cornerback spots. TJ Hall also in the mix. So, you know, it sounds like there's some healthy competition. And, like, and if you look at the last two seasons, like, just the cornerback depth is so important, because when Cooper got hurt in that Nebraska game two seasons ago and the secondary kind of fell apart, like, that was just an indication of how important it is to have that type of depth. And then last season, again, Deshaun Lee filling in two separate stints, like, it is good to have more than two guys that are capable of playing at one of those cornerback positions. So that was encouraging to hear. And we also talked to some defensive linemen, and you know, that maybe on defense is probably the biggest question mark. And I think that's more of a you know, that's more of because how strong the secondary and linebackers are, as much as it's like, I don't think the defensive line is actually like a major concern. But they're obviously losing Joe Evans and Logan Lee. So those are two pretty big pieces. And Ethan Herkin said, like, obviously those guys were awesome and huge leaders in the room. It's going to be tough to replace, but they set the standard, and now it's trying to fill that. I think you feel good with YA Black coming back, and Herkin and Aaron Graves. So there's definitely some guys coming back and that are going to need to take on a bigger role. Another guy that, you know, sounded like he's been showing some flashes, we've heard the name, is Brian Allen. I think he could kind of be a wild card on the defensive line, especially with Antario Thompson leaving. So, yeah, I mean, like, I, you know, defense is probably what fans are least intrigued about at this point. But, you know, it sounds like it's about where you would expect it to be.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, D-line will definitely be, you know, by my biggest, you know, question mark, I think, coming into this offseason. Sounds like they've got really good depth at corner. Obviously, the cash spot will be locked down, you would think, by Castro. Wampa and Schulte both come back. And I heard some of the questions you asked, and they're like, well, yeah, once one guy came back, they were all coming back. So, you know, bring him back Higgins, bring him back Jackson, bring him back Fisher. So, yeah, there's not a lot of space on the starting field right now for the back seven. And a guy like Cohen Entringer is going to be interesting, too, because he's hurt. Not back until August, it sounds like. He's not out in playing this spring. But he's another guy that could be in the mix for kind of backup cash and backup safety duty. So I've been hearing TJ Hall is having a good spring too. So good competition there for sure. One last thing on football, and then we'll move on to men's basketball. But Cooper DeJean, obviously, you've been writing a lot about him. Had his workout, I guess, and looks like it went pretty well, huh?
Yeah, and especially the fact that he's obviously coming back from the injury that had him miss the last four games of last season. And I think, you know, the workout that he had, basically he ran in the ballpark of a 4.4, and that would have been in the upper half of the guys that ran at the combine. So I don't think he hurt himself at all. He probably maybe even helped himself by doing that workout. So, he's a guy that just, to me, it's a high ceiling, low floor type pick, just because of his athleticism and just his kind of ability, just his ball skills. I mean, you even look back to the pick six that he had against Rutgers was just ridiculous. He has a knack for making plays, and you know, whenever he's around the ball, of being able to get his hands on it, and it just seems like he's. He's a guy that has a lot of intrigue, and he's, even after the injury, trending in the right direction.
Yeah, seemed like he cemented his first round status with some of his other testing as well, after just being cleared recently. So Cooper DeJean, probably your latest Hawkeye to go in the first round of the NFL draft. Not official, but it looks that way. That's kind of the news out of that. All right, coming up next, the Iowa men's basketball team is under a roster remake of sorts. Tyler Tashman has his finger on the pulse of that process. More Hawkeye Hoops next here on Hawk Central 106.3 KXNO. Welcome back to Hawk Central Radio here on 106.3 KXNO. Segment 3, heading to the 7 o'clock finish line. Chad Lystico of the Des Moines Register here, and rejoined by Tyler Tashman, my teammate at the Register, who is based in Iowa City. We did not get to have you on the show last week to talk about men's basketball, and you had broken some news that Peyton Sanford was going into the NBA draft with eligibility to return. Obviously, we know Tony Perkins and Patrick McCaffrey also in the portal, and Ben Cricke out of eligibility. So a lot of openings on this Hawkeye roster. Let's start with the Sanford thing, Tyler, because you talked to him about the NBA. Obviously, that's a huge piece of what Iowa's roster looks like next season. What kind of feel did you get from him as far as whether he would go pro or come back? Just kind of what's his mindset going into this testing process?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like probably from the outside, fans, largely their expectation is that he's going to come back. And I think that that's a real possibility. But, his mindset going into it is that, he wants to be to pursue a professional career. So, and I think that's the right way to go about it. If you go into it, half, one foot in, one foot out, you're probably not going to perform to the level that you're capable of. So him going into it thinking, this is going to be my shot, I think is not a bad thing. But there is a real possibility that he will come back. I think, I've seen him mocked in early second round. I've also seen him late second round. So it'll be interesting to hear what type of feedback he gets. I mean, from my perspective, the shooting aspect of it, just the way that the game is played now with the three ball being so important, that's just a crucial skill and one that, is really desired by NBA evaluators. But, I think, maybe from the biggest concern is from an athleticism standpoint and quickness of can he guard NBA guys and can he create shots, at an NBA level. So those are probably the bigger concerns of you know, what his professional outlook is going to look like. But to me, that's the biggest wild card of the off season, because if he comes back to Iowa, I mean, I think that change that almost to me makes the expectation NCAA tournament or bust. Like anything below an NCAA tournament berth would be a disappointment. If he doesn't come back, Iowa's going to have to scramble to fill that on multiple levels, because not only would he be Iowa's basically alpha scorer, but just the leadership that he brings. So there's a lot of different levels that if he doesn't come back, Iowa is going to be in some trouble in terms of the outlook of next season. So, you know, it'd be interesting to see how it, you know, comes to play. He sounds confident that he'll be at the combine. So, you know, that'll give him a good shot to kind of showcase what he's able to do.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like there's a perception out there that he's not an NBA guy or whatever, but man, he's almost 6'8" and he can shoot the three. And, you know, if you could do that and develop, somebody may give you a shot and, you know, start paying you professional dollars. So awesome opportunity from the kid from Waukee, recent Hawk Central Radio guest, by the way. So, yeah, we'll be following Peyton's potential pro path very closely. Obviously, Tony Perkins and Patrick McCaffrey still going through. They're getting, you know, high level interest. And I can't remember if we talked about Patrick on here. I know some people are like, oh, well, that means Fran must be gone. That was not ever going to be the case. Patrick made this decision a long time ago in his heart, I think. He just needed a fresh start. Obviously, we know everything he's gone through, you know, from going back to cancer to injuries to you know, anxiety and mental health, and I think this is whatever happens next for Patrick McCaffrey, and I think it'll be at a college, you know, a power conference college, in, you know, next season. You know, that his future to me is independent of what Fran McCaffrey is doing. Like, he, you know, if he plays for his dad somewhere next year, that would be, I'm sure, great in his mind. But I also think he kind of needs that fresh start, and I think that's the mentality he's going into it with. I think people are reading way too much into that. And that's all I have to say about that. That coaching carousel, that said, Tyler is kind of still spinning. You know, a Kentucky opening out of the blue, and sounds like Scott Drew is the next guy there, right? So I still, you know, as this thing keeps spinning, you know, there's always an outside chance, I suppose, that Fran ends up elsewhere, but I just don't anticipate that at this point. What are your thoughts on this whole deal?
No, I mean, yeah, I agree. I think the longer that there is no movement, you know, means he's going to stay, and maybe there was never, you know, ever a real possibility that he would leave, and then that was just kind of rumored and out there. But at the same time, like, you know, who would have thought John Calipari would have ended up at Arkansas? So I don't want to say, like, you know, something is never possible, but at this point, it seems, you know, very, very likely that Fran McCaffrey will continue his tenure at Iowa. And kind of going off of, you know, what you were saying, the departures, you know, four of them, Ben Cricke, Tony Perkins, DeSante Bowen, Patrick McCaffrey. Cricke was already known. The other three are in the portal. Perkins is, to me, obviously the biggest loss, just because of kind of, he was the motor to Iowa's offense last season, and because of his ability to make plays for himself and others. But I don't feel like out of that group, any of them are just feel like a massive hit to the future of the program. Like, and I don't mean that disrespectfully to any of them, because I think it would have been nice to try to get DeSante Bowen more time to try to become a dynamic scorer in the Big Ten for Iowa. And it would have been nice to have Tony Perkins come back for one more year, but I feel like the guys that, you know, they were able to retain, like Owen Freeman, Josh Dix, and then you look at a guy like Peyton Stanford, those to me are really important to what the future of the program looks like. So I think each of those guys, I was losing something to a certain extent from all of them, but at this point in time, the way Iowa's roster is shaking out, I think you feel good about the guys that you're able to get coming back.
Yeah, and I think you feel pretty good that Josh Dix and Owen Freeman, I mean, they haven't entered the portal. Like, those guys are coming. If they could get Dix, Freeman, and Peyton Sanford as a nucleus for next season, and then tack on Brock Harding, you would think is probably your point guard of the future, barring a transfer portal guy. You're at least got a good starting point, and you'd have three scholarships open, Tyler, even if Peyton Sanford does come back. So, you know, a big opportunity in the portal for the Hawkeyes as well here in the coming weeks and months.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of the same with, you know, the way the coaching carousel is going is like, the portal is obviously still open, so there's an option for guys to still jump in, and it's not impossible, but you would think as time continues to go on, the likelihood of someone else going in becomes less of a likely situation. But the thing is, Iowa is not like historically leaned heavily on the transfer portal. They've had some success. You look at getting a guy like Philip Abracha. Ben Cricky last season played well in his role. There were some flaws in kind of his game, but I think generally he was a good addition. But Iowa, you know, they have, if Peyton Sanford comes back, three scholarships available. If Peyton Sanford leaves, they have four available. They have, if they want to, they can attack the portal harder than they have in recent history. They can try to bring in more guys. It seems like, just based on the reports that have been out there, they've been fairly active and looking like trying to get another guard and another big. I don't think Fran McCaffrey is really fond of the transfer portal and all this, you know, kind of new finagled stuff in the modern game. But like, Iowa has the room to dive into that harder this offseason if it wants to.
Yeah, and certainly finances, you know, become a part of that story as well. And it's very complicated, very complicated. But they do have two freshmen coming in too, Tyler, Cooper Koch and Chris Tajo, right? I mean, those guys should be contributors, I would think. And you got Laji Dembele as well, who I thought real, and Price Sanford. So it's not like your cupboard's bare here, but, you know, and we've seen development in the McCaffrey program. I mean, I think that's another thing they lean on. So it's not dire, but yeah, I think those incoming freshmen too are going to be kind of almost forgotten a little bit. Like, I think they're pretty good.
No, I mean, I think that, like, nationally, there's not that, you know, the class Iowa isn't bringing in isn't necessarily heralded, which fits in basically with what they usually do bringing in high schoolers, because, like, Chris Murray, Keegan Murray weren't, like, on the radar nationally at all and ended up obviously going where they went. But Tajo and Cooper Koch, the thing is, they're both listed at 6'8", but they both have, like, skill sets really unique to each other. Koch is, like, he can, you know, really good shooter, moves without the ball, high-level score. Tajo, at the same height, is, like, an elite athlete, slasher. So they kind of bring some different ingredients. And I think there is, like, it's hard to gauge exactly what they're going to be like, but I think there is a level of optimism that they can come and be contributors from day one. And the other thing I look at, you mentioned some of the other rising sophomores, is like the growth of that class from freshman to sophomore year is just going to be huge for what Iowa looks like next season, because you have four guys that played, that were parts of the regular rotation last season. They each showed flashes of what they can do. They each, obviously, like, the talent is there. But if you look at, like, if three of those guys can make a jump like Josh Dix did from his freshman to sophomore year, I feel like Iowa's going to be in a really good spot. Now, if Owen Freeman's the only one to make a significant jump, then that's going to kind of, you know, reason to reevaluate what Iowa is capable of. But I think the growth of those four guys into their sophomore season is just going to be massive.
Absolutely. All right. Thank you, Tyler. See you tomorrow in Iowa City for football interviews. Talk to you later, bud.
Sounds good.
All right. And thanks to our followers and Hawkeye fans for joining us on this week's edition of Hawk Central. Talk to you next Wednesday night. This is Chad Lystico saying so long. Talk to you next week here on 106.3 KXNO. Good night, everyone.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.